friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the February 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Samson O'Malley kicks off Friday's show with a spicy preview of the weekend action in African sports. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you, Sonny. We begin this weekend's preview of African sports in Cameroon, where the African Nations Championship is in its final weekend.
For the love of the game, we have come together as one Africa, Oshan 2020.
That is the theme song of the 2020 CHAN tournament, talking about champions. And the CHAN champions will be crowned on Sunday. As title holders, Morocco will play Mali in the final at the Ahmadou Ahidjo Stadium in Yaoundé. This comes after the two sides triumphed in the two semi-final matches played on Wednesday in the tournament exclusively designed for home-based players. The Eagles of Mali sealed their place in the final after winning 5-4 in a penalty shootout to eliminate their neighbors, Guinea. Players of the Eagles of Mali there celebrating in their dressing room after reaching the final, but the same celebration was absent in the indomitable Lions of Cameroon's dressing room as Morocco booked their spot in the final when they hammered host Cameroon 4-0 at the Limbe Stadium. Cameroonian fans understandably were disappointed after the exit of the indomitable Lions.
The indomitable Lions has failed us, but we don't mind because we believe that 2022 we are going to take the Nations Cup.
No offense, sir. Well, the match, due to my own point of view, it was disgraceful for the Cameroon Lions. So I don't think, if possible, the next time they should like put more effort. Yes, I'm disappointed. I'm really angry. Yes, I'm really angry.
The match is not okay. The Cameroonians, they have disappointed us. That is the problem. So let them try to succeed next time.
Very angry because
je suis vraiment déçu.
Very, very angry.
Je m'attendais
que vraiment what we
c'est la face qui devait gagner, mais vraiment.
Ahead of the Mali Morocco finals, I spoke with sports journalist Ferdinand Ubum and Akila Matawa, who both seem to be predicting victory in favor of the Atlas Lions of Morocco.
The Moroccans might prove too strong for them this time. I think they may not be able to cope with the high pressing style the Moroccans will get at.
I remember they won this competition in 2019, beating Nigeria in the finals, and they were not in doubt. You know, they were the best team in that competition. And even right now, they are still the best. And I believe they are going to beat the Eagles of Mali in the final.
Guinea will play Cameroon in the third-place playoff at the Reunification Stadium in Douala on Saturday. Staying with the CHAN tournament, some players who excelled at the ongoing championship have already made big gains from their participation in the tournament in Cameroon by signing lucrative contract with clubs abroad even before the tournament was concluded. At least four players have signed contract with clubs away from their home country, while more players are expected to secure moves to clubs abroad when the tournament ends, as those involved in the semi-final are concentrating on winning the title for their respective countries before attempting to seal moves. Oluwaseun Oyedeji is the co-publisher of kick442.com. He's one of the sports journalists covering the competition in Cameroon. I asked him for his thoughts on what the impact of these signings will mean for future CHAN competitions.
I would like to commend CAF for coming up with this competition. It's like a way of showcasing our local leagues. From this tournament, we've seen most some players after their country crashed out, they've joined lucrative jobs, they've moved on, like America have signed some have moved out of Africa and within Africa.
The FIFA World Cup got underway on Thursday in Qatar, host of the 2022 FIFA World Cup. African champions Al Ahly of Egypt needed a Hussein El Shahat's superb 30th minute strike to beat local Qatari champions Al Duhel 1-0 in an edgy affair to set up a semi-final clash against German giants Bayern Munich at the FIFA Club World Cup in Qatar. The Cairo Club is appearing at the Club World Cup for a sixth time and hoping to improve on their previous best showing when they finished in third place in 2006. Coach Pitso Mosimane, who is a South African but manages the North African club, says they didn't get to the World Cup by chance.
We are here on merit because we deserve to be here and we believe in ourselves. Yes, we know that the standard is going to be higher than for us in Egypt. That's why we are in the World Cup, of course. We believe that we can win.
Their next opponent is Bayern Munich, and Pitso Mosimane, who described the UEFA champions as one of the best teams in the world at the moment.
We have nothing to lose, but everything to get. Imagine we win that match. Our life will turn around. Very difficult match. You can win a big team. The champions, they've won the cup, they've won the league, they've won the Champions League. What else they haven't won? Okay, we did the same also in Africa. We won everything. The treble, but they are Bayern. Bayern has got pressure. They must beat us. We don't have pressure.
Only two African sides have ever contested the Club World Cup finals. They are DR Congo's TP Mazembe in 2010 and Morocco's Raja Casablanca in 2013. Football analyst Okwemi Akiyode says Al Ahly may go as far as the final, but must cross the Bayern Munich hurdle on Monday.
Maybe Al Ahly could do themselves a whole lot of good by making it a step further than the record they equaled the last time an African side got to the semifinals of the World Club competition. So it's a big one for them. And if you look at, how football around the world have been right now, you want to look at Bayern Munich, perhaps they've lost games this season. Al Ahly could just, fancy their chance against the German champions this time around. So it's a huge one for them. Whatever happens, the final could be very open and the slot is open and it could be anybody's.
The final of the FIFA World Cup finals will take place on the 11th of February. In basketball news, captain of the Nigerian national women basketball team, the Tigress, who have qualified for the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo, Adora Elonu, says her teammates are ready to play against the world's best. The Nigerian side was pitched against defending champion the United States, France, and host country Japan in Group B in the draws which was conducted on Tuesday. Speaking from the team's camp in Atlanta, Adora expressed excitement over the early campaign exercise put in place by the Nigerian Basketball Federation, which she believes will put them in a good shape before the games.
We're always excited to see who we're going to have to compete against. And I think they really put us in a group where we're going to have to compete against the best. And my reaction is very excited, as well as the other players that saw the draw. The mood here in camp in Atlanta is really good. It's really nice. We have came into the camp where the staff has been very, very prepared for everything. Before we even entered the camp, they had instructions for us. They had workouts set out for us for when we were to come. We'll be well prepared and know what to expect. Everyone here is just really excited and really focused. And I think it's nice. It's a nice break from the teams that we've been playing on in Europe, some here in the States. The atmosphere here is really, really nice and one of excitement for what's to come when we get to the Olympics in Tokyo.
It's back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale with a very spicy African sports package. In African athletics, Ghanaian sprinter Emmanuel Dasor is hoping to make another Olympic appearance at this year's Tokyo Games. The 25-year-old Dasor made his Olympic debut at the 2016 Games in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Joining us now from Accra is Yao Afusu Larbi. Sporty greetings, Yao!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Emmanuel Dasor has been a professional athlete for 13 years. He was tipped by physical education teachers back in his high school as one of Ghana's brightest prospects in the sport. Since then, he has become a mainstay in Ghana's athletic team, participating in competitions, winning medals, and trying to keep the country on the map in athletics. In 2016, he qualified to the Olympics in Rio for the 200-meter race, a race the legendary Usain Bolt ran in. Dasor recounts the memories from his time at the topmost sporting event in the world.
The Olympics 2016 was really, really fun. I was young then. I didn't know much, less experience in the biggest stage of the world. I had fun over there. I was not stressed at all. It was the greatest experience of my life. Being able to, you know, see the greatest people around you makes you feel that, hey, I'm great. I'm great. I've achieved an accomplishment to be here too. What I have I learned to get back again is just keep working harder than I used to be. Staying focused, staying disciplined, staying dedicated. Sometimes, you know, we get drifted out with training when things don't go our way. When we get minor injuries, minor setbacks, it kind of slow down the progress of where you're trying to reach in terms of training wise to be able to compete at a higher level. But the hardest part is probably the qualifying stage. Once you qualify, it kind of takes the pressure out of you to be able to compete well, and it gives you that joy that, hey, I've made it. Now the next step is just to stay in shape, maintain the shape or improve on the shape and get more competition as much as possible.
In 2018, while training for the Commonwealth Games in Australia, Dasso was involved in a road accident that blighted his chances of reaching the competition. The accident set him back. He was left with a broken neck, several bruises, and had difficulty in using his limbs. Now fit again, he is back in training and is hoping to get to the top again.
Training has been very challenging and fun at the same time. You know, grinding every day since 2018, I haven't really competed since my accident. Getting back hasn't been easy, but hey, there's a saying, every fall back is a greater comeback. So I'm coming back stronger, I'm coming back harder, I'm working hard every day. I've seen so much improvement. I just can't wait to compete yet, which is going to come up probably next month in March. So I'm looking up to that, and I'm keeping safe and making sure that I'm healthy.
Ghana's 200-meter category is one of the most competitive race categories. There are so many athletes who can make the cut. Dasso's consistency in the team and qualification for athletic meets has set him apart from the rest. But what will bring him utmost joy in the sport?
What will come as a great joy to me as an athlete will probably be being able to go to the Olympics again and putting the gold medal on my neck. That'll be one of the greatest joy of my life. It's what I've been working towards, what I've been dreaming of for the past 13 years that I've been in athletics. It's been challenging, but that'll be my greatest joy. I would love to have that on my neck. It would show me that hard work really pays off, and I'll be able to tell the younger ones that, hey, keep dreaming. It's not over until you win. Everything is possible.
For the sunny side of sports, this is Yao Fusilabi in Accra.
Hi, my name is Emmanuel Dasso, and I represented Ghana in the 200 meters at the Olympic Games in Rio 2016, and you are listening to Sunnyside of Sports on the Voice of America.
In 2017, the year after the Rio Olympics, Emmanuel Dasso graduated from Western Kentucky University here in the USA with a degree in organization leadership and a minor in business administration. Emmanuel holds a handful of track records at Western Kentucky University, and we here at the Sunny Side of Sports wish him well as he tries to qualify again for the Olympics. Meanwhile, the global coronavirus pandemic is just one of a series of problems faced by organizers of the Tokyo Olympics. VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
You probably already know the Tokyo Olympics were delayed a year because of the coronavirus. But you may not know about the long list of other problems the Games have faced, problems that are causing a lot of frustration in Japan. There was the expensive proposal for Tokyo's main Olympic stadium, which was ditched after it was widely mocked for resembling a bike helmet, a spaceship, and a turtle. There was the original Tokyo Olympics logo, which was scrapped after accusations it plagiarized the emblem of a theater in Belgium. Just this week, the president of the Tokyo Organizing Committee faced calls to resign over his recent comments that women talk too much in board meetings. And of course, there was the coronavirus postponement, which organizers say will cost nearly $3 billion.
Things have really spiraled out of control, and that was before COVID.
That is Victor Matheson, a sports economist. He estimates Japan will have spent about $35 billion on the Olympics, shattering the original $7.5 billion budget. But Tokyo is not alone. According to a recent Oxford study, every Olympics since 1960 has gone over budget by an average of 172%. The situation has added more urgency to calls for radical changes in how cities host the Olympics. Many now see the Games as a debt trap, leaving vacant or underused sports venues and other facilities when the Games wrap up. That helps explain the steady decline in the number of countries bidding to host the Olympics. Whereas the 2004 Olympics attracted 11 bids, that number dwindled to 5 for the 2020 event. For the 2026 Games, there were just 2 candidates. So what can be done about it? One person with some suggestions is economist Andrew Zimbalist. He proposes naming permanent host cities for the summer and winter games, or designating several rotating sites.
So that you don't have to rebuild the Olympic Shangri-La every 4 years to some other place in the world, which is financially very costly, and it's environmentally costly.
Zimbalist also says the International Olympic Committee, or IOC, should contribute more money, such as television revenue, to cities hosting the games.
It used to be the case that the IOC shared the bulk of television revenue with the host city, 70-80% of it. These days, they're sharing close to 20%.
In an email to VOA, the IOC defended its approach, saying it recently undertook reforms meant to discourage cities from building unnecessary venues. It said for the 2024, 2026, and 2028 games, more than 90% of the venues will be existing or temporary. And it said it was open to the games being held in different cities, regions, or countries. But Zimbalist says for Tokyo, that may be too late.
They were hoping for a public relations boost from hosting the games. Maybe they can rescue some of that. It's pretty clear that $30, $35 billion investment is going to waste one way or the other. There's not much they can do about it.
For the Tokyo Games, most of the bill will fall to Japanese taxpayers, and they do not seem thrilled. Recent polls have suggested most Japanese want the games postponed further or canceled. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
My name is Amadou Marvin Penick, President of Nigerian Football Federation, First Vice President of CAF, and a member of the organizing committee for FIFA competitions. I want to say a big shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Amadou Penick will bid for a seat on the FIFA Council next month in Morocco. The elections are scheduled for March 21st. For reaction to Penick's campaign, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the first vice president of the Nigeria Football Federation, Sheyi Akinwumi.
Yes, indeed. The General Assembly of the NFF has endorsed Amadou Penick's bid to contest for a seat on FIFA Council. In my opinion, it was a decision and an endorsement well-deserved. At the end of the day, that bid is not an Amadou Penick bid. It is a bid for Nigeria football and Nigeria as a whole. For me, it just underscores the need for us to begin to understand how important the world football is, world politics, football politics is on the world of football. Playing. It doesn't end on the field. And I think that the Congress were educated about this and they understood exactly what they were endorsing. Not just by what was said, but what we have seen over the past few years. So they didn't endorse it blindly. It was endorsed with reason, from experience. And, well, as far as I'm concerned, I give kudos to the Congress who did that.
What should Nigeria and Africa expect from Amadou Penick if elected as a member of FIFA Council?
First of all, I'd like to pray that he gets there. I'm assured in my spirit that he will, and he will serve us well. What to expect? First of all, let's talk from the perspective of Nigeria. Nigeria would expect an ambassador who would stand his ground and not be bullied on anything that affects Nigeria, especially if it's going to affect us adversely. We should expect that there be a lot more focus on Nigeria in terms of various facets of the game. football on the pitch, support for that in terms, you know, of being able to see what problems we have as a nation. Look at our refereeing, look at our coaching. He gets the benefit, of course, of access to those who are the helm of affairs and understands the reasoning behind decisions which affect us adversely sometimes. And the same for Africa. Africa will be sure that they have an ambassador who will be at the forefront of pushing our rights, our views, and things that will benefit Africa as a whole. Everybody understands the world of football politics, and you can be sure that he'll bring all that to play when he gets to become a member of the FIFA Council.
What are some of the achievements of the Nigeria Football Federation Executive Committee under Pinnick's leadership?
You know, sometimes when people ask me about the achievements of the Executive Committee of the NFF under Amaju Pinnick, I laugh because it seems as if we have forgotten where we're coming from. Today, we cannot speak about football in Africa in any facet without mentioning Nigeria. Today, we have embarked on projects that were just dreams before. FA houses in states have started. We've done youth development projects. We've built FIFA Goal projects in remote areas. There has been a lot more clarity and openness about administration of the NFF. We have PwC. We have financial derivatives. Despite the battle from all quarters, from many quarters rather, just to show the world the perceived notion that Nigerian football is corrupt, under its leadership, we have stood firm, gone to court, won the cases, and we're happy that doing that, we have not come out and said this person or that person is our enemy. That football is standing firm in Nigeria today is a great achievement, despite all that's happened. We've also moved to the new NFF headquarters. It's a great achievement. People thought it was impossible to be done. We've produced a CAF vice president. All these things that we sort of just gloss over are things that have been major achievements. There's so many more, but you know, time won't permit. If we won't have an interview about achievements, then we can sit down and have that. But I give kudos to the president, and I think because of what he's done, he's deserving of getting a seat on the FIFA Council.
That's Seyi Akinwumi, the first vice president of the Nigeria Football Federation, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
On this edition of Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel and VOA's Daybreak Africa host James Fuddy talk with Judd Devermont, director of the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, about prospects for a more dynamic Africa policy under the Biden administration. Listen to Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Turning to tennis. Preparations for the Australian Open were disrupted Thursday after a worker employed at a quarantine hotel tested positive for the coronavirus. VOA's Gwen Uten has more details for us. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The infected employee worked at the Grand Hyatt Hotel, where more than 500 people, including 160 athletes, were quarantined in January. And after the positive test was confirmed, Australian officials instructed everyone staying at the hotel to get tested and remain isolated. related. In a Thursday news conference, tournament director Craig Tiley told reporters he believes those who were in lockdown last month only came in casual contact with the hotel employee and expects every test to come back negative. And while the COVID case forced the suspension of all warm-up matches on Thursday, the South African tournament director says he's confident the Australian Open will begin on schedule next week.
We know that we've got a period now that we've got to work through with those 507 players and their staff, 160 players actually, that need a test. And we fully expect the probability is very low that there's going to be any issue. We fully expect them all to be to test negative. And then we continue with play tomorrow like we originally planned. And if we have to go through this again, we'll continue to go through this again. And we've got, you know, another 3.5 weeks of tennis. We've got a lot of tennis to play and fully expect to keep the original schedule once we get past today.
Tiley says tune-up tournaments will continue between Friday and Sunday, which will give players who test negative 3 days of much-needed practice before the Australian Open gets underway.
As I mentioned earlier, planning on continuing with the matches we had scheduled today, tomorrow. Those that were not in that hotel could come on site and practice, receive treatment, and we'll continue with the normal preparation day today. This does give us 3 days for the leading events to complete. Obviously, tomorrow we have some challenging weather, so we've got to work around that as well. And we'll start. The intention is to complete. Is to start this round open again on Monday.
Australia has gone to great lengths to control the spread of coronavirus, and the hotel employee is the first locally acquired case in Victoria State in nearly a month. On Wednesday, Victoria State Premier Daniel Andrews said one case is no cause for panic and does not expect the Australian Open to be affected. However, an investigation is underway into how the employee contracted the virus. This year's Australian Open has drawn comparisons to the Formula One season in 2020 when the government shut down the Australian Grand Prix after a McLaren member tested positive for COVID-19. However, Craig Tiley points out that tennis is a very different sport from F1 racing simply because there is more space for competition.
We do have the luxury of having 3 stadium courts and 8 indoor courts, so we have 11 courts we could continue matches on and probably about 7, 8 turns of matches. And that'll enable us to not get ahead, but at least be able to finish by Sunday.
And the Australian Open tournament is set to begin the following day on Monday when 8-time Open champion Novak Djokovic of Serbia will begin his title defense on the men's side. On the women's side, American Sofia Kenin hopes to also defend her title in Australia, where she won her first major last year. And that is all from me today and for the week. I'll hand it back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. American tennis star Serena Williams won her Australian Open warm-up match Friday, as we hear now from Craig Gabriel in Melbourne.
Serena Williams didn't play her best, but she did what was necessary to win. She defeated compatriot Danielle Collins 6-2, 4-6, 10-6. Now, the final set of the women's matches had been reduced in an effort to make up for time after the previous day's interruption to play when all matches were cancelled due to a COVID scare when a quarantine hotel worker who was engaged at one of the player quarantine hotels tested positive. The men didn't want to reduce their final set to a tiebreak. Over 500 players and their support teams were retested and isolated. All the tests returned negative results, so play continued today, and some players had to double up. The Williams victory set up an enticing semi-final match with world number one and hometown favorite Ash Barty, who advanced in 3 sets. But Williams then announced her withdrawal because of a twinge in her right shoulder. So Barty is straight through to the final. Garbine Muguruza flipped things with Sofia Kenin and beat the American. That match was a repeat of last year's Australian Open final. This time, Garbi was superb. Naomi Osaka won in straight sets, but Simona Halep played a miserable match and lost. At the ATP Cup, the semis will see Germany play Russia and Spain faces Italy. The Germans beat the title holders Serbia with Novak Djokovic. It was decided by the doubles match, and Greece upset Spain minus Rafa Nadal. But Spain had done enough to be in the semis during the round-robin matches. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Melbourne.
Thanks, Craig. And that wraps up the February 5th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in and have a nice weekend. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of